Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores. Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
No movie star of the 50s was more beautiful, sophisticated, or glamorous than Grace Kelly, the epitome of elegance, the young blonde from Philadelphia, conquered Hollywood and won an Academy Award for Best Actress in just 6 years, then married a prince in a storybook royal wedding. Today, more than 30 years after her death, Grace Kelly remains an inspiring fashion icon. She's also the subject of Jay Jorgensen's Grace Kelly Hollywood Dream Girl, which showcases the legend's brief yet significant acting career as never before. Blending pictures and memorabilia, it traces every start of her artistic journey, including her early television appearances. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from the States, the author of Grace Kelly Hollywood Dream Girl, Jay Jorgensen. Jay, good morning to you over there in California.
Good morning, son. Is it morning there too?
No, it's just gone 25 past five in the afternoon. A rather splendid afternoon, yeah, overlooking the Mediterranean here from the studios at Talk Radio Europe. Good. So good to have you with us. She is an icon. I mean, she really is. If you think of glamour in the 50s, you can think of Audrey Hepburn. You can think of, you know, a couple of others along the way. But Grace Kelly really had the looks and perhaps overlooked the talent.
Absolutely. Not only is it glamour, it's enduring glamour. I mean, the reason you mention Audrey Hepburn and Grace right there is because they have a sort of timeless quality that certainly it's a look that young girls still want to emulate. So I give Grace and Audrey a lot of credit for being very prescient about their choices and having a very timeless quality. And Edith Head, too, who worked with both of them and created their screen image.
I mean, the thing about Grace Kelly, we seem to always think of her as, you know, a Hollywood royalty and then real royalty, you know, marrying Rainer Monaco. But what was the backstory? How did she, because I don't know, I'm a bit of a film fan, that much about her life before she hit the screen.
Well, the reason I find her fascinating is she was a very shy, sickly girl, and you wouldn't know it from all the confidence and everything that she projected on screen and as a princess. That was really learned by her. It was learned behavior. It didn't come naturally, and you know, she was very still a little awkward. She wasn't the favorite of the family. Her sister Peggy was really the star of the family. And Grace, once she got to New York and decided to become an actress, had to basically reinvent her voice. She had a sort of nasal nasal projection through her nose, and she had to rework on that, and basically, you know, finally came out of her shell and became a successful model, and then, you know, and then never quite achieved the stardom she wanted on stage, but the camera loved her so much that she, you know, you just couldn't deny that she was going to be a movie star. Everybody kept trying to, you know, get her to screen test and everything, even though she wanted to really be a stage actress. But what she had didn't really read on stage. So it's an interesting story of a woman who, you know, like I said, we think of as just being the epitome of elegance and confidence and everything, but who really had to keep working on herself to become that.
How did she come across? How did she graduate from being a stage actress? Because there were, as you said, she didn't, if you like, the theatre, proper theatre, didn't love her, but the camera loved her. In particular, the big screen camera loved her. But she didn't leap straight from her beginnings to the silver screen. So, what made the transition from television to film, and not just any director, but, you know, the great Hitchcock?
Right. Well, it was really early television. Early television, you know, started in New York, and they needed actors. They, well, you know, it certainly isn't like today where every actor is fighting for a role. They had more roles than they had actors for in the early days, and so they were really looking at stage actors and people in New York to fill those roles. So she started doing small parts. She did finally get a role in a stage play, The Father, and there was one director, Delbert Mann, who saw her and really liked her and cast her in something, and so that, you know, that really started it. And they, again, she worked very, very hard, and they saw the dedication, and she was very dependable. And she just got a reputation as dependable Grace, and who could step in and do what they needed to. And then eventually she got an agent, and that agent was the woman that was responsible for the man, Jay Cantor, who got her first really big film role, High Noon, in Los Angeles.
And I mean, if you look at the number of films that she did in such a short period of time, you know, High Noon, and then on to into meeting up with Hitchcock, and we can go back in a minute, but Dial M for Murder, Rear Window, To Catch a Thief, brilliant movie, and High Society, again, just an incredible body of work in an incredibly short, I mean, less than 6 years.
Yes, and I think that's one of the most fascinating things about her. There are actresses like Ava Gardner who do not have the number of classics. In fact, Ava Gardner, except maybe for Showboat, you're hard-pressed to name a classic film she did. And Grace did so many in just that short amount of time, like you said, 6 years. So Grace had a very clear idea of what she was capable of doing on screen. She didn't want to play damsels in distress. She didn't want to do movies about knights and, you know, where she was just reacting and looking afraid while the, you know, the knight in shining armor was dueling. She knew a good script when she saw one, and she knew a script that was right for her, and she would fight the studios to get those roles. And to the point where she actually threatened at one point, to do The Country Girl, she threatened to just walk away from her MGM contract.
Right, okay, and that was a serious... And, of course, in those days, studios had the, you know, the power of God, didn't they, basically?
I'm sorry, they had...
I mean, in those days, you know, studios had the power. It wasn't a situation where you could walk away and do, you know, become an independent. That was it. If you walked away from the studio,
right,
you were done.
Well, she was under contract, but what she threatened to do, she was allowed under her contract to go and do stage work. And so she threatened that she would just go back to New York and work on the stage, but she wouldn't be allowed to make any more films during that time until her contract ran out. But she told them, she's like, I'm happy to just walk away and, you know, and do the stage work. And they finally came back and, you know, allowed her to do the Country Girl.
How did she get in touch and then meet with Hitchcock and their relationship, which came out with some of the greatest sort of roles ever? And there's a lovely quote, which is, Mr. Hitchcock taught me everything about cinema. It was thanks to him that I understood that murder scenes should be shot like love scenes and love scenes like murder scenes.
Exactly. Yeah. The reality of Hollywood is a little different, I think, than most people think. I think we think, Hitchcock probably, saw Grace Kelly and just, fell in love and realized she was his heroine, and but it doesn't exactly work that way. There are very real reasons, sometimes not so glamorous, why people do things. And Hitchcock was doing Dial M for Murder, and he basically just needed, he was having trouble finding a movie star who would work in the price range he needed. And so he had to look at a certain lower level tier of actress, and he began looking through screen tests. And Grace had done a test for a film called Taxi that she didn't get, and then she had just come out in Mogambo. And so these two things sort of led him to Grace Kelly, but he wasn't entirely 100% thrilled with the idea. He felt she was still a little too she was still a little too inward. He had to work very hard during Dial M for Murder to bring her outward, but he definitely saw the promise in her. And then when they were doing Rear Window, he went to the screenwriter and said, she has a little trouble bringing things outward. Can you work the script around her and her strengths so that, she'll be more comfortable and the audience will see more of her? And that's essentially what they did. And it was really during Rear Window that we saw the magic happen. We saw what Grace was capable of. We saw Hitchcock bringing it out of her. And again, they both worked very hard to make that magic happen.
I was going to say, because as with all great stars, as with Hepburn, as we mentioned Hepburn as well, but perhaps the thing behind a truly great iconic star like Kelly is the fact that she made it look effortless. She made it look as if she wasn't breaking into a sweat. And in fact, you said earlier in an interview she was known as hardworking Grace. And this is perhaps, her professionalism shone through and enabled her to get these roles and keep getting these roles in such a short period of time.
Right, yes. Well, if you watch, if you watch High Noon, she felt that she wasn't on her game, for High Noon. And I kind of disagree. I think she's very good in High Noon, but I think she would say that it wouldn't have looked effortless for her at the beginning. But eventually, yes, she understood how to act for the camera and what was expected of her. And she was she really relied on her directors to show her. She was always prepared when she came to the set. She very rarely went out during the week. She was making a movie. She studied that script. She knew her lines. But it took a great deal of work for her to look, for her to look effortless.
Indeed. Talking about looking effortless, you can't talk about Grace Kelly without talking about her style. I mean, she was a fashion icon at the same time, appearing on the front cover of magazines, photo shoots. That look, was that look foisted upon her by fashion editors, or did she have this innate sense of her own style and again, carrying off that grace and beauty?
Yeah, again, that came over time. Grace wanted to look like a serious actress in Hollywood. And so she was always, in the early part of her career, trying to dress down. She wanted the producers to see her more in cardigans and flannel skirts and things like that, and to see her not as a glamour girl. And finally, as she was achieving a little fame, she was dating a dress designer. And he basically told her, he said, It doesn't really show your versatility. He said, you can wear great clothes and still still have people take you seriously and see you as versatile. And so around 1954, when her career was really taking off, or actually really 55, when she was really hitting as a star, she finally sort of came out of her shell and would wear, you know, sort of the more glamorous clothes that we're used to seeing her. Even the conservative clothes of like 1954, I think people still appreciate the kind of tweed, you know, the tweed coats and things she was wearing. They sort of have taken on a timeless appeal too. So it was she was definitely always growing and changing. And then you know, after she became a princess and was carrying the Hermes bag that was eventually named after her, the Grace Kelly bag, it just all continued. I'm sorry.
No, please, you go on.
I was just going to say, but certainly her screen wardrobes in Rear Window and To Catch a Thief are probably the things that I think people, when you really think of Grace Kelly in fashion, those are the things that most people immediately come to mind.
And this is perhaps the thing that she could keep going, because there she is at the height of her power. She's won an Academy Award. She's got this string of brilliant films behind her. High Society, a musical, for goodness sake. Rear Window, you know, one of Hitchcock's sort of best films, as well as To Catch a Thief, and just that driving scene alone just brings out the goosebumps in me. But and then she meets Prince Rainier of Monaco, and she marries him, and of course all the star shaking has to stop. All the acting has to stop, because she is now royalty, and you can't have the Princess of Monaco, Princess Grace, appearing in something like a film. So perhaps you could argue that the fashion, the icon status grows, because this is one of the only ways, because she took to the royal life pretty well, it has to be said, and added a style to Monaco that it was already pretty stylish. But when Grace Kelly became Princess Grace of Monaco, it went through the roof in style terms.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and she relied on a few designers. I mean, she relied on Christian Dior and a few people to make sure that she was always stylish in her role as a princess. But you know, it's interesting to me that Grace was a very liberated woman in many ways. She was, you know, she wanted her career at a time when a lot of women didn't. And then, interestingly, she gets it and is at the top of her game and decides that she really does want a marriage and a family. And she, you know, she meets this man who, you know, at the time it would have been hard for her to meet a man who would have been comfortable being Mr. Grace Kelly. And so she meets a man who is the prince of a country who isn't going to be Mr. Grace Kelly. And she, you know, ends up giving up this career that she'd fought so hard to get, and essentially settling down, although certainly in a bigger role than she had as an actress, and that you know, you're right, she was at the top of her game. They would have just found projects for her to do, but it had been only 2 years where she was really, you know, so famous as an actress, and she just didn't know if it was going to last. So it's interesting to me. She's really a dichotomy in many, many ways. And this, you know, part of it is this liberated woman who then decides, no, I want a family life, and I want a family life with this man. She's a fascinating woman.
Indeed, and also, she's, you know, you mentioned Grace Kelly. Even now, I mean, it's over 30 years since her death in 82, wasn't it? When she died in the hills above Monaco, and you say Grace Kelly, and people immediately know. People who say Ava Gardner, they might have a bit of a problem with that. Elizabeth Taylor, not a problem. But you say Grace Kelly, Audrey Hepburn, Elizabeth, you know, that's absolutely, they know who that is. And that's a showing of her standing as an icon. There are over 400 pictures, and some many of them are unseen, in this book. It must have been great and quite something to do the research on this one, Jay.
Oh, it was terrific. I mean, I was very lucky. I saw her as a kid read poetry, and when I lived in Pittsburgh, and I didn't have that much of a backstory on Grace, and I wasn't prepared for this woman to walk out on stage and be what they talk about, the fire and ice. She was, you know, the poise was amazing, and she was incredibly commanding in person. And yet there was a warmth to her, and as she read the poetry, there were funny poems, and she drew you in. So at all at one time, you felt this incredible respect, and then this warmth of, you know, you just really wanted to love her. And she was a really fascinating presence. And so from there, I stayed very interested in her career, and various things happened along the way. Of course, she passed away just a few years later. And so there was, you know, the incredible outpouring of grief and the media sensation that surrounded that. And then they re-released Rear Window, which hadn't been seen. It had been pulled from circulation. And so there was this momentum that just kept happening over the years. And, of course, the Monica Rowe family, they've recently done exhibits of her gowns, and they're just, the interest just seems to keep going, and the films keep being shown on TCM, and it's interesting to see how her legacy has grown.
And it must have been wonderful as well, going and seeing all those unreleased shots as well, you know, the vintage magazine covers, the dress, you know, the dress designers stuff, you know, on-set candids, all those sort of things must really, if you think you have a knowledge of her, and having seen her, and that's going to be my surprising fact of the day, that Grace Kelly once read poetry in Pittsburgh, is going to make me smile for the rest of the day. But, you know, that it brings you a fuller understanding of somebody who was an icon, who was a film star, who was a princess, but was also, you know, a pretty determined character as well, and a human being.
Sorry, she was a pretty...
pretty determined character, and, you know, and a fully rounded human being.
Right, yes, yeah, exactly, yeah. And just even when you see people like, say, a Charlize Theron or somebody, and they're, you know, they'll do homages in fashion magazines to Grace, and the look is still so... You just know it. You know immediately when someone is doing, you know, doing their homage, or you see something on a runway, and you just, oh, that looks very Grace Kelly. It's amazing how timely a lot of that still is.
The book is called Grace Kelly, Hollywood Dream Girl. It's out now on Day Street, D-E-Y-D Street Books. It's by Jay Jorgensen. Jay, if people want to find out more about you or about the book itself, is there a website? Do you do the social media thing? Do you Twitter, or do you do the Facebook thing? How can people get in touch with you and find out more about this fascinating woman?
Well, the Day Street has its own. Day Street and HarperCollins have their own site, and then I have a Jay Jorgensen author page on Facebook.
And so the question remains, Jay: once you've done, you know, the beauty, the icon that is Grace Kelly, what's next in your sights then for your future book project?
Well, I had another actress in mind, an actress I think deserves a book. But it's funny that, you know, there are certain icons like Marilyn and Audrey and Grace that are very easy sells to publishers, and then certain people they just feel they can't market them as well, and it's unfortunate that we're not seeing books on certain people, just because publishers I think underestimate the book buying public. Mm. When I started writing books in 2010, I did my first book on Edith Head, the costume designer. I really felt like that was going to be the almost the last book ever published, because everybody kept saying, oh, it's going to be Kindle and everyone's going to look at books, you know, on the computer, and no one's going to buy a hard copy of a book. And it seems to be bigger than ever, and especially for books like the Grace book, which is a coffee table book, which has great big photos that people want to sit down and look at. And I think we underestimate our book buying public. I think they're still out there. So I'm hoping there'll be another book. I just haven't exactly figured out what that next subject to captivate the publishers is going to be.
Well, you're going to send me off on a tangent here, and I'm very glad to, because you can't have a beauty such as Grace Kelly or an Audrey Hepburn. You can't do that. And these were figures on the screen, the big screen, and that's where their beauty shone through, surely. You cannot get a conveyance adequately of the beauty and the impact they had by looking at, on something on a Kindle, which is on your phone. You've got to see these. I'm so glad it's a coffee table book, because the coffee table book surely does justice to your subjects, my friend.
Right. I agree with you. But I do think that the book buying public is proving that to be true. But it was just, there was a time a few years ago where, people were just predicting that, no one, just in the same way that people don't seem to want a CD anymore, they're happy to listen to music online. I think people were predicting the demise of books, but I think people still love to hold. They still love to hold a book.
Absolutely. A long way it continued. This book is called Grace Kelly, A Hollywood Dream Girl. It's out on Day Street Books. It's by Jay Jorgensen. Jay, it's been a pleasure to speak to you today. Have a lovely day.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Take care.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.